Welcome in Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. My name is Joe George alongside Jeremy Branham talking all things Houston Astros. Today's show brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. This tequila is all natural, unfiltered, best, made with 100% blue agave and totally additive free. Find it near you at bluestartequila.com. Jeremy, we've got a lot to talk about. We're talking about Altuve, back from injury. But I got questions about him playing in left field because of what's happening around him. We're past the 100 at-bats for Cam Smith, so it's finally time for us to have that discussion. I know you've had it on the Killer Bees, but we need to talk about it. We're going to talk about Lance McCullers, and then I've got a very random question for a Astros sponsor that I need your take on at the end of the podcast.
Okay, sounds fun.
Today. Let's talk about Jose Altuve. So he comes back from injury. They put him at second base. They want to limit his running, but we're seeing Zach DiCenzo have some success at the plate this year. Second base hasn't been great with whoever's been out there when it's not Jose Altuve. My question for you, is it just time to move Jose Altuve back to second base?
What do you mean because they're limiting his running?
That's what Joe Espada said.
Because that's why he's batting second?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to give him more time to get ready.
Yeah, no, back at second base.
Oh.
Because they don't want him running out there in the outfield all the time.
That's what he said?
Yeah, that's what he said.
When did he say this?
He said it on the day he came back. It was just for the day he came back. But they said they wanted to limit his running in his return.
Yeah. I mean,
so it just kind of got me wondering, like, with the way DiCenzo's been playing, you got Altuve, who's been fine in left field.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the lineup's better with DiCenzo in it every day. So, like, I'm just wondering if they should just move Jose Altuve back to second base. Call the experiment a wash for this year.
Yeah.
And just say, we're better off with Altuve in left, and we'll figure out second base in the offseason.
See, I think it's more of a long-term play, though. I think this is, they're looking at Jose Altuve for the rest of his contract, which still has multiple years on it, and saying he can't play second base for us for that contract. Now, your point about your best offensive lineup does have him at second base. I mean, it's kind of two-pronged. It's like, first, there's the caveat, the if question. If Cam Smith's going to be on this team, what is your best offensive nine with also the development of Cam Smith? Because Cam Smith can't be on the team and not play, you know, all the time. Like, he's got to play 4 or 5 times a week at minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's on this team, what is your best offensive lineup with him on the team worrying about his development? It is with Altuve at second base. Because now the question is, Zach DiCenzo or Brendan Rodgers or Mauricio Dubon? And I think we would all answer from an offensive perspective that Zach DiCenzo is the best option of those three guys. So how do you get DiCenzo? Will you play him in left field? Well, what do you do with Altuve? Will you play him in second base? And then now Mauricio Dubon and Brendan Rodgers go to the bench. Now, I don't think – I mean, look, Espada's done that some days. He's done it with Wesneski. He did it with Gusto whenever, I guess, Altuve came back from the little hamstring strain or whatever. But can you do it with Fromber and Hunter Brown? Like, Fromber Valdez on Tuesday pitched a gem, was outstanding. And look how many ground balls he got. Like, he was getting ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. That's why Jose Altuve is not playing second base when Fromber Valdez is on the mound, because they filled that Jose Altuve doesn't have very much range. Hunter Brown's a good ground ball pitcher too. So I think you can be selective of when you do it. I would never do it with Hunter Brown and Fromber Valdez. Like, that's a Jose Altuve left fielder DH day. But outside of those two guys, okay, maybe instead of Altuve playing once at second base every turn through the rotation, maybe it's 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's when Gusto's on the mound. Maybe when it's Lance McCullers on the mound. Goodness knows you need offense when Lance McCullers is on the mound. Colton Gordon, I don't really know his profile, but, you know, he's a rookie. Who cares? So you maybe, like, I hate to be, like, iffy on it, but look, that's what Espada's doing. He's picking out his best nine that gives him the best chance to win every single game based on who's pitching. So I would have a hybrid. Like, I would be more of a hybrid than he has been. He's been Altuve 1 time at second base through the rotation, usually when Wesneski pitches. I would turn it into 3 times. I would do it for everybody with the exception of Fromber and Hunter Brown.
No,
so it's a 5-man rotation, it's three times every time through the rotation. If it's a 6-man rotation, it's 4 times every time through the rotation.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair way to look at it. Like, you just have your best lineup and defensive, you know, situation possible in those moments. It protects your pitcher from Jose Altuve being a liability in the field, which they clearly think he is. Like, there are people who still don't quite understand why he's not just in second base, and they think he should be at second base because, well, he's the greatest Houston Astro of all time.
Sure.
But we're at the point in his career where, like, it's just not reality anymore.
I mean,
on any other team, Jose Altuve is just your DH. But you have Yordan Alvarez here, so, like, that's why he can't be. Like, maybe outside of the Dodgers with Ohtani as a DH. But, like, everywhere else, a team would just put him at DH at this point in his career. The Astros just have to be a little more creative with it.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to look at it, too. I mean, Jose Altuve deserves loyalty. Jose Altuve deserves to be here for the entirety of his career. Does it give you the best chance of winning baseball games that Jose Altuve is making $25 million and he's really a DH, is playing left field? Is Jose Altuve currently, right now, hitting enough to be a full-time DH?
Probably not.
They're probably no on both of those. Like you know, loyalty, all the things that come into play. You want to make sure Altuve's, you know, the greatest Astro ever, is here for the duration of his contract and the duration of his career. Let's find a way to make it happen. You can make the case that both of those things reduce the amount of wins the Houston Astros could pick up over the next 5 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And look, it's the, we've seen teams go through this before. Like, the Astros made that decision. I think it's a good decision because, like, I like to see a player, you know, because you're not doing this with every single guy that's been part of this core. You're letting guys walk. You're trading guys away. Like, you have one guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Tigers fans looked back at the end of the Miguel Cabrera era with any regret of, like, what he was. I mean, now, Astros fans don't want to be that poor, and I don't think they ever will be. I don't think they'll be what the Tigers were, you know, a 100-loss team every single season. But, like, Miguel Cabrera could still contribute as a DH at the time. He was fine.
Late in his career?
Not like the last 2 years? No. Yeah, the last 2 years was a disaster.
Yeah.
And he's getting, what, fake All-Star bids?
Yeah, they put him in the All-Star game, him and Pujols, like legacy things.
One of the worst things they've ever done in baseball.
Jose Altuve is the only guy I would do it with.
Yeah.
And, like, we've lived it in Houston. Like, Craig Biggio, stuck around chasing 3,000 hits. Now, Biggio was actually pretty good late in his career. Like, Biggio, late in his career, was still popping some home runs into the, not other things. He was popping some home runs into the Crawford boxes. Like, he was still solid up until his final year. But those teams weren't good. Like, so we have lived this. And, like, what's the priority? Like, I don't want to go down this road. Like, I'm not saying they should DFA Jose Altuve.
Yeah, I know.
Like, Jose Altuve is a Houston Astro, should be a Houston Astro forever. Stick him in left field, put him somewhere in the lineup, let him do his thing. And then if he's a hindrance, we'll just figure out a way to make it up on the back end. I don't want Jose Altuve playing anywhere else. It just brings up the point, you know, that sometimes loyalty comes in the way of winning. Like, you got to pick one sometimes. Like, George Springer's contract hasn't been great. Mm-hmm. Carlos Correa has not been great as an Astro or post-Astro career. Bregman has been early. We'll see how that plays out. It's 40 games in. Kyle Tucker's been Kyle Tucker. Like, he got off to a better start last year than he has this year, but Kyle Tucker's Kyle Tucker. Now, you got a return for Kyle Tucker. But you look at every single big contract given to a player in their 30s, almost every single one does not work.
Yeah, at some point, even if they work early, at some point they fall off.
Yeah.
Like it's just the reality. I think it's the reason why it's part of the reason why I think we're headed to a lockout at some point, you know, in the next, year or so at this point. Because I think players view it that way, too. They think, hey, I should be making more money during the prime of my career, not making my most money when I'm not a good baseball player anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that's a huge reason why, like, it's all of it. It's guys being kept down in the minors too long. It's guys not getting paid early enough. It's the teams not wanting to pay 35-year-olds $40 million. Like, it's just the infrastructure of baseball is due for a change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we're headed for some kind of a lockout when the CBA runs out.
The GMs have gotten smart. Like, I mean, 20 years ago, GMs weren't like, oh, we can't play players, and they were doing it. You know, they were paying guys into their 30s and not realizing how foolish it was. And then all of a sudden, you get way smarter across the board from that general manager spot across baseball. And they start to see these contracts aren't good.
Yeah,
these contracts are not good. And they
loyalty.
Were like, and then I always point to the service manipulation time. I think the best example we have of that in Houston was George Springer.
Yep.
That was genius. That was smart. Like, do you want George Springer in 2014 when you lose 100 games? They didn't do that. Or do you want George Springer in his final year when you go to the ALCS? It's smart to service time manipulate if you're not a good team.
100%. Like, and that's and the players don't like it, and that's what the battle is going to be. But with Altuve, like, I think it's been fine. I was like, man, maybe they should just put him at second base just to optimize having DiCenzo in the lineup every day. Big picture, what it makes me think is that's the acquisition you're going to be trying to make at the All-Star, at the deadline, is for a second baseman. It's probably a starting pitcher, probably second baseman. Like, that to me is where you look at this team and where it's headed. You know, I was working with Dell this week and people were calling asking about trading guys away, and I'm like, that's not happening. The Astros are going to add guys. And I feel like second base is where you have this gap now. It's much easier to figure out where you add to the lineup on a day-to-day basis versus past years.
That does create an issue, though. Like, if you trade for a second, let's say you trade for second baseman XYZ, who cares for this, you know, point, like who it is. But you trade for a second baseman that's going to be playing every day, right? Let's call him Joe George. You trade for Joe George, he's your everyday second baseman.
I am the same height as Jose Altuve.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, you also have as many career home runs, especially in the playoffs. So you trade for Joe George. He's your starting second baseman every single day. So that means Jose Altuve is your starting left fielder every single day. That means that Yordan Alvarez is your starting DH every single day, except for the days that he takes PTO, which is quite often, especially on the road. If Zach DiZinzo's still hitting, where's he playing? If Cam Smith's still on this team, where's he playing?
Yeah.
So if you trade for a position player, and Joe George in this case, starting second baseman every single day, that does open up another question that you have to answer.
Mm-hmm. When I think about adding a second baseman, I picture Zach DiZinzo not on this team. It's probably part of what
Well, now you're cheating the team.
I know.
Zach DiZinzo's been better than Cam Smith.
Yeah, or maybe Cam Smith is back in the minors.
Like, that's probably the solution if they made that move.
But that would be, I mean, like, we can have the Cam Smith conversation right now. We're going to have it on the show. The idea of sending Cam Smith down in July, I think, would feel a lot different to me than just sending him down right now. Because if you send him down in July, that is like, I feel like it's really gotten away from you.
At least.
If you're having to do that, it feels like you're really, it's a big letdown. We're still in July, like, the conversation should be almost more of like, well, we have to play, you wanted the conversation, but we have to play DiZinzo and Cam every single day, figure it out, make the lineup work in some way with Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez and all these guys. Like, just find a way to make it work. But if Cam Smith is still doing what he's doing now in July, like, A, he shouldn't be up. Like, I don't think there's even a question.
Yeah. At least a trade, though, you have a reason.
Yes.
Like, I think it's actually, I think the opposite of you do. I think it's, to me, it'd be better for the Cam Smith argument if it's you trade for a guy that you have to have in the lineup versus you got beat out by Zach DiZinzo.
So it's almost like a free pass.
Yeah.
But even then, you're still technically getting beat out by Zach DiZinzo in this scenario, because then isn't DiZinzo just the right fielder every day?
Yeah.
So it's like you're still choosing DiZinzo over Cam Smith. The only would be if you acquired a right fielder to play every single day and let Cam go back down to the minors. Mm-hmm. So let's have the conversation. I know you and Joel had this on the Killer Bees, 3-6, Monday through Friday, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So is it fair to say now it was too early to call up Cam Smith?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Now, to be completely fair, we have hindsight 2020. We have 100 and whatever plate appearances now. So we had the benefit of hindsight, which at the start of the year, you didn't have the benefit of hindsight. Mm-hmm. Now, there were tons of questions. Should you be calling up a guy who's had less than 25 plate appearances above high A, played 5 games above high A? Was it Florida State a year ago? Was prepping for his final year in Tallahassee? You know, like this guy was playing in a NCAA baseball regional, a year ago.
Yeah.
So, like, those questions existed. Like, let's not ignore that those questions existed. Now, there's so many layers to peel back of this. Like, did Dana Brown do it because he wanted to showcase his centerpiece of the Kyle Tucker trade? We've talked about it before. Like, if you have enough conviction to call up Cam Smith on opening day, despite the lack of seasoning in the minors and, especially advanced minor league ball, should you sign him to a contract extension? But he hasn't been one of your best offensive players. Like, people, he's been great defensively. Did you call him up for his glove? He didn't even play right field until the final 2-3 weeks of spring training.
Yeah.
And, like, he has been really good defensively in right field, which is great for his future outlook. And, like, I think he is your everyday future right fielder. Probably already is, because I don't think Dana Brown will send him down. I think he's pot committed at this point. But when you look at the numbers, I mean, just an average that's a little bit higher than the Mendoza line. His OPS plus is under 100. It's under 90 as we record this right now. And then Zach DiZinzo has been better, and Zach DiZinzo has far less at-bats. Like, even Chaz McCormick is getting on base at a decent clip. I don't think they're playing Chaz McCormick enough, like, to at least see what he has. Chaz McCormick's got an on-base percentage of 343. your team on base percentage is .322. Mm-hmm. Like, Chaz should probably get a little bit more run than he's been getting. So Cam Smith has played, you know, over 100 plate appearances. DeZinzo is nowhere close to 100 plate appearances. Chaz isn't even close to 50 plate appearances. So the answer is overwhelmingly yes, that they called him up too soon. And then that's just talking about it from, like, the 2025 Astro perspective. If you talk about it big picture with Cam Smith, and we just talked about service time manipulation and all that, and, like, I still think Cam Smith has a bright future, but would you rather have a Cam Smith who has an OPS plus of under 90 and you're burning one of your 6 years? Because the Astros aren't great at locking up guys. So are you? If you get 6 years, finite number of Cam Smith, you get him 6 seasons, would you rather have him in 2025 or would you rather have him in 2032? Whenever he's more seasoned, probably closer to his prime, I can guarantee you that his numbers in 2032 are going to be better than what they are this year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think that Dana Brown misplayed the hand. I don't think you can argue it.
No, I agree with you. I think at this point, like, it's pretty clear, like, that Cam should have started in the minors or been sent down earlier to figure it out. Because, I mean, we're teetering on the line where it's just – the questions about Chaz that you're asking about DeZinzo are fair, and it's just are you hurting the team having him out there every single day? I'm not worried about the player,
no,
in any capacity. I'm not worried that these struggles are going to have long-term, you know, concerns about what it's going to do to him mentally or anything. I know some people want to point to that stuff. Like, to me, like, if it's like, if you can't handle this, then, like, you're not a real ball player, and, like, you're going to be a bust anyways. And I don't see that in Cam Smith.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I think they made a mistake. And I honestly, I know it feels like he is pot committed, but I do wonder at some point, like, when does Joe Espada step in and be like, hey, I just think we're, and I know that's not his personality, but, like, I think we'd just be better every day right now with Chaz and Zach in right field and just letting Cam go down and get some work. And hopefully in a month he's back. Like, because it's not like you're sending him to purgatory. You're sending him an hour and a half away to Sugarland, like, with a bad day of traffic, and he hits 300 in the minors, and you call him right back up, like, and there's no question about it. If he hits in the minors, he's replacing Zach DeZinzo and Chaz McCormick in right field, no matter how good they're playing, because he's the future of this baseball team, essentially. So it's not like it causes more problems. Mm-hmm. If you send him down, he just needs more work. So I get why it feels they're pot committed and why he's still on the team right now. But I do think for the immediacy of this year, I think it would be better off for both him and the Astros if they sent him down.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think I don't think that it diminishes what Cam Smith's going to be as a player. I don't think that they've ruined him or anything like that. It's more about, does he give the Astros the best chance to win in 2025 right now? I believe the answer is no. And then the second one is, are you getting the right extra year of Cam Smith, because we don't think the Astros are going to sign him long-term, right? Like, they don't have a great history of signing guys long-term unless they screw them and get completely team-friendly deals like they did with Yordan Alvarez. Mm-hmm. They don't believe in the long-term contract. So is it better to have him in 2025 or on the backside of his club control? I think it's pretty clear that it'd be better to have him on the backside of that club control. As now, currently, until Yordan comes back, like, you're not doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Yordan being out does give you the option of playing DeZinzo in left, Altuve DH, or DeZinzo DH, or Cam, whatever. So you're not doing anything until Yordan comes back. And then the other part of that is you don't really have anybody banging down the door that deserves to be on this team. Like, they called up Cesar Salazar. He hasn't even played.
Yeah, like, I forgot he was up on the roster.
Yeah, so, like, if – like, let's play out the scenario. Yordan comes back. Obviously, Cesar Salazar is the guy going down. If they were to send down Cam Smith, which I don't think is very probable, I think it's very unlikely, what's the move? Like, who's the call-up? No one's banging down the door. Shea Whitcomb's having, probably the most successful offensive year in Sugarland. Mm-hmm. For Shea Whitcomb, though, is he a big leaguer? I don't know. He has questions defensively. Where are you playing him? Is he just going to be a bench guy? It's a pinch hitter off the bench? Doubt it. You know, Melton hasn't done much. Bryce Matthews is starting to swing it a little bit better, but his numbers aren't good, and he strikes out, like, 45% of the time. So, like, there's no one that's ready to come up. Like, Guillermo that you had in spring training, he's been hitting awful. So, I mean, there's not really the move to make to have somebody else take his spot.
Yeah, the only argument would be it is a depth piece that's going to play once every 5 or 6 days that you're comfortable with playing once every 5 or 6 days. And just the more consistent at-bats for Cam in the minors is just better for him.
You get some position flexibility with Guillermo who can play a little defense. Or maybe it is Shea Whitcomb that can play poor defense at a bunch of different spots.
Yeah.
But has a stick that might be able to help.
Yeah, but like, yeah, he can play second, he can play third. Like, just like having him that can do, and we look, we saw what it was, what, last year when he had like three errors.
Because I mean,
in the game that Alex Bregman got his walk-off ovation.
He was hungover. But like, it was the day after a celebration.
I know. Like, and he's, you know, young kid, probably doesn't drink that often, that much. But like, yeah, it's, I think Whitcomb might be the move, but it's not like you're calling someone up to like save the day. Like, it's just, they're almost a body at this point.
You're giving somebody a day off.
Yeah.
Like, Isak has played a ton. Walker's played a ton. Like, you're giving a spot a guy that can fill in to give somebody a day off. It's not someone that's actually going to help the team in terms of like their actual value. It's more depth to sit somebody because they've been overused.
All right, today's episode brought to you by Blue Star Tequila. Let's hear from our friends at Blue Star Tequila so they can teach you what night harvesting is all about.
In the highlands of Jalisco, as the fierce heat of day fades into dusk, the sun dips below the horizon, and our jimadores begin their work. Harvesting our precious agave azul beneath the glow of stars, while the night air is cool and calm. Away from the harsh heat of the sun, we protect our agave's freshness, locking in essential natural properties and sweetness, and preserving its unique flavor profile. This world-first practice has been warmly embraced by our jimadores, who relish the soothing embrace of evening's cool air as they work beneath the moonlight. 100% agave azul. Night harvested, unfiltered, and additive-free. We invite you to taste the Blue Star difference.
So, Jeremy, obviously one of the things with doing an Astros podcast is there's things that happened like 5 or 6 days ago, but this is our chance to talk about it. So we haven't talked about Lance McCullers yet. We're going to talk about the performance and what happened after the game. Let's start with the performance. It was a disaster. It was a mess for Lance McCullers. Didn't get out of the first. His first outing was fine, 87 pitches to get through four innings. So it wasn't great. I don't know what anyone really expected from Lance. I don't think this is surprising. Let's start. Are you surprised with how bad it was?
I'm not. No.
Because it's like it's been 3 years.
I posted on Twitter at Jeremy Branham. I put like an over-under of 443, I think it was. It could be a little bit off of that. But somewhere in that range, 440 range, in every single commenter, I think, every single one said under. That he was going to have an under 440 ERA. And it's like, sheesh. Like,
yeah.
That's tough for a guy that's had Tommy John, that's had an eternal brace on his UCL, and has had flexor tendon surgery. According to my research, which I'm not a good researcher, he and Walker Buehler are the only two guys in baseball that have that going on right now. And Buehler's been like in and out of the pitching staff because he's always getting banged up and like arm fatigue and all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been the same pitcher that he used to be. He used to be dominant. He used to be really good. Like, he was going to be the dude at the top of the Dodger rotation.
For years.
Yeah. And then he had these injuries and he's fallen off a cliff. And then you break down the performances too, and like, you know, off speed, middle, can't find the zone because I think he knows his stuff doesn't play. I mean, he deserves a runway of X amount of starts. That's probably going to change for everybody. Like, how many starts you think he deserves. But what I've seen from him in four innings, small sample size, first two games back in 2.5 years, so again, deserves a runway. But of what we've seen of him in a Houston Astros uniform in his first two starts, he's not a big league pitcher. He simply is not.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's obviously a little complicated now with the injuries that are happening, with Wesneski getting hurt, having to call up guys like Colton Gordon. You're still waiting for Spencer Arrighetti to return. So, like, these injuries kind of play a factor into the fact that McCullers kind of becomes a depth piece in a way for this team. And the idea that, like, everyone's going to be healthy is always unrealistic. We talk about this every deadline. It's like, what are you going to do if everyone comes back? Well, what if Christian Javier comes back? And what if Urquidy comes back? And what if McCullers comes back? And then they never come back.
Yeah.
Well, let's go through this scenario just for a second here. Just if Arrighetti and Wesneski were to all come back, you can't go to a 7-man rotation.
Like, no.
And Lance has to be the odd man out in that situation. Now, My guess is what they do is Wesneski, who's come out of the bullpen for the Cubs in the past, is just he's a designated piggyback to Lance McCullers, and that's your plan for that sixth day is to limit the bullpen, and whatever Lance gives you, you hope Wesneski gives you the same, and maybe Hader comes in the ninth, and that's it. But, like, it's not – even if you were fully healthy, like, I'm not sure Lance McCullers deserves that. So you mentioned Runway.
Yeah.
Assuming that at some point both those guys will return, if we live in this fantasy land where everyone's healthy, what is the runway? Like, what is the runway for Lance? I mean, like, because I think you – he's done enough for this team in the past, and he has a high salary that he's going to get one. Is it 10 starts?
That's a lot.
Is that too much?
No.
Because that means we're already a fifth of the way through the runway.
Yeah. No, you're your point about the injuries increases the likelihood and perhaps the length of the runway that Lance McCullers is going to get.
Yeah.
Because if Eric Gedde wasn't hurt, Wesneski wasn't hurt, and those guys are pitching good, well, Lance McCullers is going to have a shorter runway.
Yep.
All of a sudden, oh, arm fatigue. Lands on the IL again. Oh, okay, another rehab assignment, 30 days, and you know you can kind of buy some time that way. Which I think that would be the – like, it's hard for – if you're playing out the scenario and you're going to a six-man rotation and Lance McCullers is in that six-man rotation and Hayden Wesneski is the designated piggyback for the sixth starter, Lance McCullers, your bullpen is thin because you only have 13 pitchers. And if you go to a six-man rotation, that you're playing a reliever down when you go to a six-man rotation, you got seven guys. And then if you're designated one of those seven guys as a designated piggyback for Lance McCullers, that means that Joe Espada has six guys the other five games. So that's a hard scenario for me to envision. I think the play would be if Lance McCullers is pitching poorly. I don't know how close Eric Gedde is to coming back. I saw him still in a soft cast at the little, you know, wife thing, which is kind of weird to me. Hey, all the Astro wives, go parade around in your best dress. And I know they do it for charity. It's just,
I know, but I agree.
It's kind of odd. So, like, and he has to be built back up, right? He hasn't thrown him forever, so he has to be built back up. Wesneski, like anytime somebody has an elbow injury that's a pitcher, I automatically think the worst. So I haven't even allowed my mind to go. Like I've already made peace with the fact that Wesneski's done for the year.
Yeah, me too.
If they say, oh, he's going to be back in 3 weeks because it's fine. It's just swelling and he's, you know, arm fatigue. Okay, great. We'll deal with that when we get there. But for the sake of the conversation, if Eric Gedde's back and Wesneski is back, to me, you make a mystery injury with Lance McCullers. And he's still pitching poorly. You make a mystery. It's arm fatigue. It's easy. Like, he's got three arm surgeries. Him getting arm fatigue is very common.
Very logical.
So, like, you're not going to get in trouble for that. So, arm fatigue, Lance McCullers, 15-day IL. You start the rehab assignment clock on him again. If he starts pitching well, okay, there we go. If you need a starter, hey, Lance, you're our guy. So, that would be the play if everybody comes back healthy. But because you've had the injuries in the rotation, it does give Lance McCullers probably a longer leash than he would have gotten if other guys were healthy.
I agree. All right. I'm going to lay out three scenarios here for you. I want you to tell me which one you would, you know, place your hard-earned money on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Very little money.
Lance McCullers makes the playoff roster as a pitcher. Lance McCullers is DFA'd, or just Lance McCullers doesn't finish the season because of injury.
Well, I mean, that would be the answer.
That one? What if it was just the first two of DFA or... just not on, or,
see,
just, the, or he's on
see,
the playoff roster.
That's a harder question because I think what the Astros would do would just place him on the IL.
And just, they're not going to do what they did to him. I think because of what he did for the organization, I think that's a fair way to look at it, is like they would just say, hey man, you're not cutting it.
Yeah.
We're not going to DFA you. We're going to pay you out, but like you're going to go down there and you're hurt.
That to me would be what they would do.
We would never know that technically.
I think we would.
You think so?
I mean, if he continues to get lit up and can't go past third inning,
yeah.
Like, and oh, he's hurt. Okay. Whenever they need other starters, oh,
that's
okay.
True.
Like, I think the writing would be on the wall. So I think that would be the play if he continues to pitch poorly. And of those three, would be the easy answer. But if you went DFA'd or playoff roster, that one's tough because I do think they'll be loyal to Lance. I think they appreciate that Lance battled back and worked hard to try to, you know, be a pitcher who can contribute to the organization whenever he's making lots of money. I believe they would go – I think there's a better chance he gets DFA'd than makes the playoff roster.
Yeah. I think it's just inevitable that, like, if he makes the season healthy, he's not on the playoff roster – He's just there in case there's a fight to cheer on his teammates.
Yeah, I can't imagine a scenario where he's pitching in a playoff game.
And I know it's two starts and we're talking about four innings, but like I can't envision it.
I can't envision a scenario where he's pitching in August, much less October.
No, because eventually they're going to add someone to the bullpen. I mean, to the rotation at some point. So Taylor Scott was DFA'd.
That surprises me.
So Colton Gordon could come up. That happened yesterday for the Astros. That surprises me a little bit, I would say. Surprises me, too.
I'd have to look to see the roster at the time that they did that as to, like, why that was the play and not something else. I mean, he hasn't been great. Like, even his peripherals last year weren't fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a huge believer in FIP. But his FIP last year wasn't even that good. But I figured they would – like, he's still – like a low leverage reliever for a bullpen.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's not.
He's going to find a job.
Yeah, somebody will claim him.
Yeah.
Somebody will claim him for sure. I thought that they would do something else. Now, I wonder if this is a more big picture play, though, for Forrest Whitley's return soon. Because he pitched in the, he had a rehab assignment a couple days ago in Sugar Land. Obviously, his stuff plays. And
Dana Brown
like
said
him.
He could see him up in the next week.
Okay.
Yeah, so I wonder, said that on the flagship.
So instead of, like, how are we going to create a roster spot for Colton Gordon, who wasn't on the 26-man roster, and then also thinking about, like, some plays going forward, he'd be that guy. Look, I haven't been blown away with Taylor Scott. Even last year, I think he was a bit lucky.
Yep.
But I thought that they could probably do something else as opposed to Taylor Scott being the odd man out.
All right, final two things here before we wrap up the show. I was watching a baseball game through MLB TV, and sometimes you get advertisements even. It's an out-of-market game. And Houston Methodist, if you ever want to sponsor the show, like, you're more than welcome to. Do you think they regret putting Yordan Alvarez as the main person in their commercial? Every time I see it, I just laugh.
Not really a
because they're talking about, like, recovery, injury, dealing with injuries. And every time I see Yordan Alvarez pop up, I'm just like, this feels like a bad play.
Yeah.
I'm just like, that's like.
They should have gotten an Iron Man.
Probably should have got, like, Altuve to do it.
Yeah, he's had a little bit of injuries, too. But he's healthier than Yordan. Like, who would be the. Pena.
Pena is a good one.
Pena, knock on wood, I say he's an Iron Man, and he's probably going to tear his ACL. Pena would be good. Pena would be good, but I mean, the worst two, Lance would be one.
Yes.
And then Yordan would probably be second.
Yeah, it would be.
They have, like, him, like, all, like, those little things on him. What are those things called? I don't even know.
And then he's in the batter's box. I'm just like, I just feel like this is a bad look for your, of, like, trying to talk about health and things like that. We are a baseball podcast, so we'll wrap up with this because even though it's not directly Astros related, I don't know if you had ever a chance to meet Pete Rose, but I got to meet him once in these very hallways. He was in town doing some TV stuff with an old show of ours on once was called Yahoo Sports Radio, and got to meet Pete Rose and was forced to have him sign like 15 autographs. It was really awkward, but I was the sucker who was told to do that. But Pete Rose, his lifetime ban has been lifted because he's dead, and I guess that means it's okay for him to go into the Hall of Fame now. Were you surprised?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I was surprised.
Because it's not just him either.
Yeah, Shoeless.
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Like, it's weird, too. Like, didn't they say that because they're dead, they can now be eligible?
Well, I mean, it's like, it is called a lifetime ban.
Yeah. So, like,
I don't get it.
My take on this is, like, I've really lost luster in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Totally
like,
agree.
Where I used to be as a, like, the PED stuff. The writers, like, gatekeeping who deserves it and who doesn't whenever they're kind of guessing who used PEDs. Mm-hmm. Like, they really are. Like, I mean, A-Rod, like, was suspended, but Barry Bonds was never suspended by baseball.
Well, there's guys like Mike Piazza who are in the Hall of Fame, and, like, there's lots of evidence that, like, suggests Mike Piazza used steroids.
I mean, there's been some Houston athletes that have been alleged to use that are in the Hall of Fame. So I don't like the gatekeeping of who should be in, who shouldn't be, based on, like, them playing moral police. Mm-hmm. Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player ever.
Yep.
Was he for now?
Oh, it's Ohtani.
No.
He's going to take over.
How?
I know he's not going to have the numbers, but what he's going to do in total.
Is Shohei Ohtani even the best hitter right now?
No, he's probably behind Judge.
Yeah.
But he's going to be a two-way guy.
We'll see. We'll see if he comes back and pitches. Didn't he have a second Tommy John, Shohei?
That's true.
And I've also been reading how, like, they might not want to use him as a pitcher this year because of what it could mean as him as a hitter. Like, they don't want to risk him to injury and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fair. But what you were saying about Barry in the Hall of Fame.
Like, Barry Bonds is the greatest hitter ever.
Mm-hmm. Right now it's not even a question.
Barry Bonds, allegedly using, is the greatest baseball player of all time. And these writers have, like, gatekeeped. Oh, no, he used, so he's not going to be in. Okay. Like, so that, to me, loses the luster of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Then you start to see, like, some of the, like, I think Lance Berkman got a raw deal.
Yep.
Like, he was off on the first ballot when he's probably the second greatest switch hitter of our generation behind Chipper Jones. And even his numbers are comparable to Jones. Jones is in. Mm-hmm. Lance was off first ballot. So I've really lost my intrigue in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So when the news came out yesterday or 2 days ago, whatever it was, that he's in and Shoeless Joe are in, cool. Like, what does that mean? Does that carry any impact?
I hope his family turns it down. There's that interview when Pete goes on with, he went on with Dan Le Batard before he passed. It was a little bit before he passed. And he said to Dan Le Batard, I don't want to be let in after I die. Those were his words. I kind of hope his family gives the bird to the Hall of Fame.
That'd be interesting. That'd be fun.
And just says, like, we're not doing this. Pete doesn't want to be put in the Hall of Fame after he passed away. We're not bringing him in. And I'm with you. I think the Hall of Fame, it's ruined it. It used to mean something. And it's the writers that have ruined it.
It may be the players. The users.
But, like, Carlos Beltran's going to get in the Hall of Fame. And we know the truth about how involved he was with the sign-stealing scandal. And he's going to get in the Hall of Fame in the next 2 years. And they're going to gatekeep Jose Altuve. And people act like they're not going to. They're going to. And, like, it's just the reality. Like, it doesn't take away from what the Hall of Fame, what the players did. Like, yes, they cheated, but it wasn't against the rules. Half of them haven't been caught.
And they knew it, too.
And the moron who ran the league is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And that's where it really lost me, was that when they put Bud Selig in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hold up. This guy who ran a corrupt organization, essentially, he's allowed to go into the Hall of Fame. But Barry and McGuire and Sosa and all these guys, it was just stupid.
And why did Bonds do it?
It lost me.
And why did Bonds use? Allegedly.
Because everyone was.
Because he was ticked off that Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa, who are lesser players than Barry Bonds, were getting all the shine and the limelight when he knew he was better.
All
so he's like, I'm going to use so I can show him who's boss. And then he did, and he did it way better.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that, too. Yeah, it is a joke that Selig's in. That's the biggest crime of it all. The other part of that is it saved the game. Like, the strike of 94, baseball numbers were down. No one was going to games. People were mad at baseball. They were mad at baseball. They were scorned.
Yeah.
In the summer of 98, with Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa, who were juiced to the gills, saved Major League Baseball. Selig knew it.
Selig
absolutely knew it.
They
turned the blind eye, and then you're going to make somebody else the issue. I mean, in a lesser scale, it's what happened to the Astros.
100%. Everyone was cheating.
Robert Manfred was getting letters from every team in baseball. Hey, this team's cheating. Hey, this team's cheating. Hey, this team's cheating. And Manfred's like, oh, slap on the wrist. Oh, let's make somebody the scapegoat. Let's make the Astros the sign-stealing scapegoat, like we made Barry Bonds, Mark McGuire, Sammy Sosa, Rafael Palmeiro, the PED scapegoat, even though we completely knew what was going on and did nothing to get in the way.
It's the reason why Bonds' records are still in the books. Because they knew everything was going on. And it's the reason why the Astros World Series championship was not stripped, because they knew the truth out there. Joey Votto, all these players told you it's all of it. All right, that does it for us here at Inside the Icebox here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel. Remember, it airs as well as a radio show from 6 to 7 on Thursdays on ESPN 97.5. Today's show is always brought to you by Blue Star Tequila. You can find out more information at bluestartequila.com. We will talk to you next week. Peace.